So, like I said, we are a speaker meeting, and it does fall on me this evening to introduce our speaker. I'm really pleased to be able to introduce these gentlemen to us this evening. This is someone I've known for a while on social media, and we kind of connected properly fairly, not that long ago, actually, a different kind of way, and we've shared a bit of service together over recent months, and it's been a real pleasure and a real privilege to do that. I like this man's approach to his recovery. I like his commitment to service, and I'm really looking forward to hearing him share his story. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce you to Earl, who's come along to share his experience and hope with us this evening for 40 or 45 minutes, whatever he's comfortable with. So Earl, the floor is yours, my friend. Over to you. And if you're not sure how to do it, I'll unmute you. And welcome to the meeting. The floor is yours, my friend.
Thank you, Steve. Okay. Good evening, everyone. My name is Earl, and I am an addict.
Hello, Earl.
Hi, Earl.
Welcome.
Hi, welcome, welcome, welcome.
Thank you, thank you. I must admit, this is different for me. I've never actually done a share on this platform before, and it's different. I suppose. Any meeting we go to, whether it's virtual or face-to-face, we experience different styles and different ways of the meetings being facilitated. So, yeah, I'll hopefully settle down and get a little bit comfortable in a couple of minutes. An experience strength note. I was speaking to my partner earlier and obviously letting her know that I've been asked to come along and share here this evening. And when I say it's for how long, and she's going, wow, you're going to love that, ain't you? Because 40, 45 minutes. I'm not sure I've ever actually been asked to share for that long. Not saying that I haven't shared for that long, but they didn't ask me to share for that long. Usually it's the 15, 20 minutes thing. We'll see how I'll go. Really, my experience, strength and hope... I'm definitely the addict that our literature talks about. I was just having a quick look through the basic text and who is an addict, just to almost remind myself again of when I first had that piece of literature presented to me. Because prior to coming to NA or finding NA, I did not know that I could stop using drugs. I didn't know that it was possible for me to live without substances, without drugs. And I'm just going to be true to myself and speak how I speak and not get too caught up in, oh, what do they do here and how do they accept, what language do they use. I'm just going to speak how I share. So I ended up first being introduced to substances when I was in the local authority care system when I was roughly 7, 8, 9 years old, and being introduced to solvents, then cannabis, and then I'm not sure at that age, and actually on reflection, I'm really not sure that I ever really enjoyed taking drugs. It's just that I've done it, and so my stories, like a million stories that we hear in the rooms of NA anyway, that it just progressed. And in a nutshell, from the age of 7, 8, 9, first being introduced to those type of substances, up until the age of 39 when I managed to find NA and start to actually do something about it, I basically progressed through everything that was available whilst I was using, until I found myself using Class A crack and heroin for the last 15, 20 years of my drug use. And it was just an horrific time, really. But whilst I was caught up in that, I didn't really acknowledge how bad my life was. I knew that I didn't want to be doing it. I'm pretty sure once I picked up heroin, Yeah, probably heroin. We've been a few months of playing about with heroin. I knew I did not want to be using heroin, but I'd gone that far that choice was no longer mine. I was obviously physically addicted as well, so every time I thought, no, that's it, no, I'd wake up here and, well, I'd have to go and do it. And again, as I says, not knowing that there was a way out and the way out that's worked for me. So I'll just put it out there now, and it's strange because in some of our local meetings, it's almost like you're not allowed to actually say how clean you are and that. Well, I'm really proud that I'm over 8.5 years clean now and abstinent, NA clean, and because again, as I say, I'm definitely the addict that our literature talks about, where I didn't know it was possible for me to get a day clean, let alone over 8 years. And so, how did I do it? Are you? My life in active addiction basically consisted of, I will use, or if I don't use, I'll be in prison tomorrow. That's where my life took me to in the end. I will use on the streets, or I'll be in prison having to find the ways and means to go and get whatever I needed to be able to use. And I'd almost accepted that that was my lot in life, and I was quite content with that. So my journey to finding recovery was going to the services that existed within Birmingham at the time, and I never ever wanted methadone, and methadone just scared the life out of me. And I think I know why, because I can remember being in prison one time and being twoed up with somebody that was on a methadone prescription, and it was at a time in prison where they didn't really give you anything. Well, if you're a opiate addict in prison, then they'll give you a paracetamol. And seeing this lad actually go through methadone withdrawals and the pain that he was in and what have you, and it just scared me. And I think that, yes, scared me away from ever taking methadone. But then Subutex came into our area. Into Birmingham and had a drug worker at the time who, yeah, look, we've got this wonder drug and this might help you, Earl. And I can remember him saying to me, this is how you use it, this is what it'll do, and blah blah blah. And he's gone, and I know you're gonna go and use once you've had it, but you might as well give me your money. And like the good addict that I am, I tried this Subutex and went to go and use on top. Realised that the heroin wasn't working, and I really did think, thank God, I've found a way out. I don't have to use drugs no more. Again, not realising, as our program informs us, that I was dealing with something that I had no idea about, the disease of addiction. I've not been introduced to our literature or anything at this point, and I had no understanding that, well, I will use again anyway. So yeah. That was good for a little bit, but inevitably I did use and continued the progression of my drug use. And yeah, so my life consisted of just not being able to maintain any type of relationships, abandoning partners and my children, and disassociating myself from my family, and yeah, just finding myself. Because sometimes I get quite sad thinking about how I accepted my life was at that time, where I was quite happy to make myself street homeless because I wouldn't go back to a property that I had because it was too far away from where I would be going to earn money the next day. So I just thought, well, I might as well stay here instead. And then all the horror stuff around, I'll never inject. Well, obviously I started injecting, and just the things I used to do. I heard some chap on one of the convention chairs, one of the circuit speakers from somewhere in the world, and I just thought, wow, that really is exactly how I used to be. Where he basically says about how much time he spent in public toilets or pub toilets or whatever toilets, just anywhere you could find to actually go and use. And yeah, that was how my life was. that once I'd got whatever, I'd have to go and find the nearest toilet. And if I couldn't find a toilet, bushy streets where I just didn't care about society, and I would do what I needed to do. So I think I've painted a picture pretty much that my active addiction was, again, I suppose I thought I was unique and nobody had it like me, even though I was around people all day that were doing exactly the same as me. No, yours weren't as bad as mine. And obviously coming into recovery, that no, I'm not unique. And although my story is bad enough for me, I do get to listen to others share their experience, strengths and hope. And sometimes I do actually think, oh, you got off lightly. You got off lightly. I've still got my limbs. I've still got my mental health. I'm relatively healthy. Apart from, basically having to learn to grow up at the age of 39, 40, I think, I've got out relatively unscathed. No, that's probably not the right phrase. But I feel blessed and fortunate to have basically found a way out. So how did I find my way out? I got to a stage where I really was trying to stick to a script, although I weren't really able to. I was doing that thing of substituting, again, not understanding the disease of addiction. Right, I can just have my script, or I can have a drink and I can smoke cannabis, not realising that no, I can't. And I was going to day services, and I think that was probably the first time I came across somebody who just spoke to me differently. And obviously, with hindsight now and becoming friends with this chap, knowing that he was part of the fellowship, and he was speaking to me in a language that just wasn't familiar to me, that I hadn't experienced before. Services had not spoke to me like this before, and let me know a little bit about what I was dealing with, even though it didn't really sink in how he was speaking to me. But he told me that there was a fellowship that existed that I'd never heard of. And even then, I didn't really pay attention to it. But what I do know now, he planted a seed. He definitely planted a seed in me. And I was going to day services. And again, I was coming across people who were working in these day services that were speaking to me differently. And as I got to build relationship with them, and some of them opened up about their own experiences and what have you, and were quite open to tell me their journeys and where they'd come from, and introduced me to fellowships, and I got invited to come and experience an NA meeting. And I went to an NA meeting in the local area of Birmingham. And if you was to ask me what actually happened at that NA meeting, I wouldn't be able to tell you, because I just wouldn't be able to tell you. But something clearly did happen, because I kept coming back. Something happened, and I don't know what, but something happened because I kept coming back. And then from going to the meetings, and thank God for our tradition free, that we don't have to be clean, your own requirement for membership is the desire. And I didn't even know what desire meant. I didn't know if I had the desire, but I do believe that something made me want to keep going back to the meetings. And I can remember being all nervous and anxious, seeing people having a laugh and talking to each other in little social groups and what have you, and just thinking, how do you do that? How do you actually engage with each other? Because I couldn't do that. The only people I used to engage with prior to finding recovery were either other users, drug dealers, chemists, or selling something to somebody or other. I couldn't engage with my family. I didn't know how to even have rudimental type of conversations. I couldn't show any compassion, love, tolerance, patience, or anything like that that we get to have an understanding about when we start working our program. But I remember this lad who and this is something that always sticks with me. He made a beeline for me, and he definitely went above and beyond to actually make me feel welcome. And again, in our literature about how we talk, how we make the newcomer feel welcome, and this lad really sticks in my mind that, no, you really did. It's sadly he's not with us no more, but I know that he really made an effort whenever he seen me to come and have a conversation with me, tell me about his experiences of recovery. And I can remember him showing me First off, he showed me an iPhone, and I hadn't seen the latest iPhone, and I was amazed at that initially. But he then showed me a video, and it was a video of him at a world convention. And I didn't know that these type of things happened in that. But what was the interesting bit that got my attention more was he was showing me of a link up between the convention and a prison in America, and how they were speaking to each other, and they were all there for the common purpose to try and help each other in that. And it just amazed me that these things were actually happening, because again, I was unaware of it. And I don't know, I just kept coming back. And it was through going to meetings that I then got introduced to people that work within the services within Birmingham. And I ended up getting a place in our local detox. And I went in there, and I treated it like prison, really. I don't want anything. I just want to do my rip. I'm ready, blah, blah, blah. And I done my rip in there, and it was just like prison. The day I got out, I used. And I didn't even get home, and I'd used. But something had changed, and I know what it is now, that I've been introduced to NA, and I've been shown that there's a different way to live, and there's a different way you can do things. And from that day, I made a decision, because I weren't at my worst then. I had my own property, I had some material things and all that type of stuff. But I made a decision to give my property up, go into some supported accommodation, and throw myself into NA. And it was only a few years ago that one of my close friends in NA actually said, "Oh, you didn't get clean in detox. You got clean in the rooms. You used when you come out of detox. So your story is you got clean in the rooms." And I never really acknowledged that, but it's true. Because again, that tradition free, the only requirement, you don't have to be clean, the desire and all that. And I just threw myself into meetings. And so what I'd done, literally for the first couple of years of my recovery, was meetings, 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 every single day. We was fortunate in Birmingham at the time where we could have two or three meetings every single day. And there was a group of us that were going around together just doing meetings, meetings, meetings. If there weren't a meeting, I would still be together going and having coffee, fellowship and all that stuff. And I don't know if there was a core of us and majority of us that were part of that cohort of individuals that come to the fellowship at the same time were still here. Where we got a foundation. And for me, initially, meetings, I thought, well, I'm clean and I'm just buzzing. I'm really happy I'm clean. And being introduced to the program per se, I didn't really look at our program for the first couple of years, but I'd done everything else. I was going to meetings, I had service, I got service, I had a sponsor because that was the thing that everyone was suggesting. Get a sponsor, this, that, the other. And I got a sponsor, so I could say, I've got a sponsor. And the sponsor I had at the time, he I can remember him saying to me, he's gone, "Oh, you'll get through your first year or so on gratitude alone, but then life takes off and shit gets real and you've got no defense against the disease that you're dealing with. And when you start experiencing feelings that you've never had to deal with before, your go-to will be to pick up drugs because that's all you've ever known." And again, I didn't have any understandings about feelings, about fear-based illness and all this type of stuff, because I hadn't really looked. I'd listened to lots of shares. And again, for my first couple of years, I wanted to hear the most gruesome war story. And that served a purpose for me. And my sponsor was right, apart from I never picked up, but things did get real. And what I noticed was the group of people that I came around with, they were evolving and they were changing, and the common denominator amongst them, they'd started working the program. They'd started having a look at step work and engaging with sponsorship. And that was where the attraction really got me. And so I started having a look at our program and reading our literature. And I think the first time I really, really read our literature properly and really had a look at who is an addict and actually really paid attention to it, there was nothing in it that I could dispute. Not that I was looking for anything to dispute, but there was nothing in it that I could say, "Nah, that's not me." It was like, wow, whoever's put this literature together has clearly lived a very similar life to me. And as it says, we could probably add to it and I could. But there was nothing that I'd read through Who is an Addict that I could think, nope, that's not me, that's not me. And then the first time I was introduced to step one, we admitted we were powerless over our addiction and our lives had become unmanageable. Again, it was, there's nothing that I can dispute about having wanting to make that admittance, but working with a sponsor and what have you, and I definitely think this is true for me, that admitting it was never an issue. I admitted that I was an addict years and years ago, not really understanding the ramifications that come with admitting you're an addict, in the sense of, okay, then admitting it's one thing, but what are you going to do about it? Because I didn't know there was anything I could do about it. But now being introduced to NA, more importantly, being introduced to our program, and seeing it evidenced all around me that the program was changing people's lives and was allowing people to stay clean a day at a time. And, so going into step one and admitting that I was powerless over my addiction in the sense of drugs, because that's all I was looking at initially. Yeah, I had no qualms and my life was completely unmanageable. I could not do anything, absolutely nothing. And I couldn't pay bills, just all the stuff that we're all familiar with. And then I can remember one of our predecessors from the local area and wherever you're actually like, allowing me to think about step one in a deeper sense. And he's gone, it's not for you now, but if you stick around and you go through your program, you'll realize that our step one talks about the disease of addiction, and as you stick around and you get to look at it a bit more, you'll see it's more than just the drugs. It's more than just the drugs. We'll have a look at behaviors and we'll have a look at feelings and the unmanageability and how it manifests in all different ways and all that. And I can remember thinking, what are you on about? So I'm a drug addict and I'm here because of drugs and what have you. But the longer I've been here now and the more work I've done, I recall our conversations together and just think, yeah, you was right, man. You was right. Because it definitely is much more than that for me today. But primarily, it always will be about the drugs. And I know that, God forbid, anything should go wrong or I pick up, it's the drugs I'll be picking up. And I don't want to go back to that place. So then being introduced to... step two, we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And I still hold on to this one for me, that the power greater for me most definitely is meetings, this what we're getting to do here. Being around the support network that I've managed to build, definitely sponsorship, but I think that one of the most important things that I've had to learn is it's okay to ask for help, Earl. I mean, it's okay to actually say, I don't know and I need some help. I don't know. Will somebody help me? And I think I've been really blessed with sponsorship that when I do speak to my sponsor, whether it's we go through step work or just speak, just building a relationship and what have you, if I ever go to him with something, whatever it may be, if he hasn't got any experience on whatever it is that I may wish to talk about or anything, he won't give me an answer. He'll guide me towards somebody that may be able to actually help with whatever it may be. Because he really does hold on to like what our program is. We share our collective experiences. And if I haven't got experience, then you're not asking me for my opinion. Because I can give you my opinion, but my opinion might not be helpful. And I try and apply that stuff in the way that I do things today. I don't always get it right, but I try to. So yeah, and I can remember we had a circuit speaker come to one of our home groups, some chap come over from America, and it was the first time that I actually heard anybody really speak this passionately about the program, and he was really focusing on step two, and in a nutshell what he was saying was, if we don't actually get an understanding of step two that works for us, then the chances are the rest of the program isn't going to work for us, because we've got to find something that we believe in. And I can remember him also saying this, that has always stuck in my head, that even if you don't believe in a higher power, a God, whatever it may be, somebody at some point has been praying for you, because you're here. Somebody's been praying for you, and their prayers have been answered. And I know, again, through now being in recovery and building relations up with my family and my mom, listening to my mom talk about her experiences whilst I was in active addiction in the sense of substances and that lot, and how she used to pray and pray and pray. And I'll just put it out there that over the last couple of years, I've lost my sister to active addiction, and I've got an older brother that sadly hasn't managed to find a way out, and he's still in and out of the criminal justice system and all that type of stuff. And when we was burying my sister, my mum says, "I never seen this coming. I always used to think that we'd be burying you." And I just thank God that mum doesn't have to worry about me for today. Just for today, you don't have to worry about me. And so yeah, and then moving into step three, and we made that decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand. And I can remember working with my first sponsor and not really understanding what that actually meant. And he just broke it down as, okay then, your will's your thinking and your life are your actions. And whether you believe or don't believe, it's just actually just, yeah, just speak to somebody, just speak to somebody again, just following on from that step two. And he's gone. And even if you don't, if you're not able to actually think of it in the sense of God, of however you or don't understand, just make that decision that you're going to continue with the step work and actually have, allow yourself to have a look at yourself and allow yourself to actually grow and do something different and whatever. And I'm pretty sure this is familiar for a lot of people that are part of the fellowship and what have you, because I know it's definitely my experience that before we approach step four, we hear that much about step four this, step four that, whatever. And for some reason, it didn't faze me, because I knew I'd just got to that point in my journey that, no, I'm willing to have a look at this and I want to have a go. And when I did go through step four, and I say this to my sponsees now, it's not asking you anything that you don't already know. It's just asking you, okay then, have a look at it, put it down on paper, and then be willing to talk to someone about it. And it was really interesting, because as I was going through my step four, I could definitely see the patterns playing out, even as I was writing it. And yeah, some of it is not comfortable, some of it's not nice, some of it's quite like, okay then. But what I do accept is, that was then, and it doesn't have to be me now. And there's definitely stuff that I looked at in step four that, no, I own no part in, but I definitely played a part in my life and how I viewed the world and all that type of stuff. And it was good to actually, yeah, just have a look at it all. And I think for me, my favourite steps are definitely six and seven. Because I think for me, that's where I really actually acknowledged, okay then, this is how you behave, and this is how you have behaved all your life, and this is how you've gone through life, and it served a purpose of sorts, and what have you. But a lot of that stuff now, for me anyway, isn't conducive in this new way of life that I'm seeking to find and how to live and that. And then going, so... Since we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character, and I remember at that point my sponsor asking me to ask some close people to actually identify some defects for me, and he's, oh, well, why do you want to do that? He's gone, because you see yourself in 2020 vision, your close friends, family, whoever it may be that you choose, see the whole of you, and what they all come back with, I couldn't deny it all, and I know it was being done from a loving place and that lot, and I really appreciated what they brought back. And then moving into seven, we only asked him to remove our shortcomings and then having a look at, okay, then, so there's some defects, right? But there is other ways that you can actually behave, act, respond, or whatever it may be. So I don't have to always be selfish. I can be selfless. I don't always have to be rude. I can be tolerant, patient, compassionate. All these things that I've never really tried, but I love trying it now, and I love acknowledging that, yeah, I can do things differently. I can be of service to people how I wouldn't have even dreamt of it prior to recovery. And then making that list of all persons we had armed and become willing to make amends. And I suppose this is, for me, where the importance of having a sponsor that's actually gone through the work and actually has got an understanding and what have you, because actually making that list of... it weren't that easy, because it's now actually, okay, well, I've had a look at myself and what have you, now I'm going to have a look at what I've done to other people and that, you know what I mean? It's not that easy, but going through that with a sponsor and seeing, okay, so what's practical, what can you do, what can't you do, who really does need to be on that list and all that type of stuff, it's been really helpful, and it allowed me to actually... Yeah, realise, listen, I live 30-odd years harming the world, you know what I mean? And I can't go through my life now thinking, right, every person I've ever come into contact with, you're going to have to make amends at some point. But some people just aren't here no more. Some people, they obviously wouldn't want me back in their life in whatever shape or form. But the beauty of working with a sponsor is being able to work that stuff out and who you would and who you wouldn't and all that. And then the making direct amends, and obviously the first one that we're doing, or that I'm doing, is, well, I'm not using today, I'm not a menace to society today, I'm not costing society so much money being caught up in the criminal justice system, I'm giving back, I try my best to actually, yeah, be of service to others, I'm employed, I now work in the prison where I used to actually be a frequent visitor. I get to basically do what we do for nothing. But I've been blessed and fortunate to find a job that pays me to do it as well. So then we saw 11, we sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him. And this has, again, been a running theme for me throughout my recovery, is the Serenity Prayer that we use in our fellowship and what have you. That's my go-to. That really is my go-to. And even now, I can run a Serenity Prayer through my head several times a day, where it just allows me to calm myself down. And it allows me to actually just sit, whether it be on the bus, whether it be walking to work, whether it be at home on my own. It just allows me to just sit. And I do notice that over the last few years, something else is happening, and it's allowed me to get in touch with myself much more. Because for me, I believe that whatever God may be, whatever that higher power is, speaks to me through my body, through how I feel, through my conscience, where I do know right from wrong, and I try and do right instead of wrong now. And again, I don't get it right all the time. But again, as it says in our literature and our program, we practice these principles in all our affairs. It doesn't, for me, that doesn't mean we get it right every time. But what I do have is another chance to try and do it differently next time for whatever it may be. And then step 12, having had that spiritual awakening. Remembering listening to one of the predecessors, what is that spiritual awakening? And he just simplified it like this. The spiritual awakening really is that, well, that program works. I mean, our program works, and I realise it works, because I'm sitting here now on a meeting on a Saturday evening, being able to share to a screen with a load of initials on there, and actually say, I'm 8.5 years clean, and I never ever knew that I could get a day clean. I didn't know I could live without substances, and I definitely credit it all to our programme, to our meetings, to our fellowship, to sponsorship, to the principles that have been introduced into my life. And now I do believe and accept that it's my responsibility now to carry this message to the addict that still suffers, or whoever actually wants to hear this message. Because what I don't do is I don't force it on people. If people want to know a bit about my background and then ask me what I do, I'll more than happily tell them, yeah, my name's Earl, I'm an addict, so I deal with this on a daily basis, and this is what I do for my recovery. If you want to come and have a look at what I do, I'm more than happy to bring you along. And then what do I do? Steve, I'm not sure of the time, because I'm not sure how long.
You're good, my friend.
Okay, cool. So then, having gone through the program, and again, we're a 12-step, 12-tradition program, and me being introduced to the traditions has definitely come through service, and again, as our literature talks about, and what have you, and through watching how the predecessors go through, sort of being guided through service. I remember my first service position was meet and greeter at one of our local meetings, and it introduced me to our fellowship. It got my face known in the West Midlands and in Birmingham and what have you, and I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I couldn't get there early enough, and I wanted to stay till the end, and I just loved it. And then I've gone through the group service, and the only service that I've never really enjoyed doing within the fellowship is treasurer, because I would always spend the money and then have to put it back when it was needed for ASC. So I didn't like treasury, but I've then got an understanding of business meetings and group conscience and how it's a collective, and we do it with the guidance of loving God within the room, and then realizing that I don't have to be right, and it's okay for me to have my view, and if you don't get your way, it's not the end of the world, and it's not all about me. And again, being able to serve the group, and I've just really enjoyed learning that process and interacting with others, and then getting to serve our fellowship or groups that I was part of, home groups in the ASC. And I've loved going to ASC. I've done it, unless I was on holiday, I've done it every month for the last 8.5 years. And I've loved the learning. I've loved seeing new GSLs come along, new steering committees come along, and just watching our fellowship grow and evolve, and what we've all done over the last 18 months, 2 years, where we've had to move online, and seeing how it's all come together, people working collectively together for the greater good, to make sure we've still got something that we can do to, yeah, to keep our recovery alive. And then I was blessed to have the opportunity, and this is where really I come in touch with Steve, where I was fortunate enough to actually given the opportunity to serve our West Midlands area at Region, and I just loved it, because it introduced me to a whole new level of service and a whole new bunch of people who'd been around for a lot longer than me, and just watching how they conducted themselves, and it's allowed me to grow and see, yeah, just how the growth that was in these other people, and listening to what they were bringing to the table, and how all the service that goes on behind the scenes to keep our fellowship alive, really, and allow us to do things that we can find ourselves taking for granted, not realising there's people actually doing this selfless work on behalf of all of us. And yeah, I've just really enjoyed that. And another thing that I shied away from initially. I never wanted the responsibility of sponsorship. I didn't think that I had anything to offer. Because I remember lads coming up to me, I don't know, first couple of years asking me to sponsor, and I used to fob them off saying, "Nah, you don't want what I've got. Might be clean, but you don't want what I've got." And then my sponsor actually saying, "Earl, it's your responsibility now. It's your time to sponsor. It's your time to give away what was freely given to you." And I must admit, it's been a real eye-opening experience. It's been beautiful, and it's been painful, and it's been But it's been rewarding because it's allowed me to actually acknowledge what I have got to give and what I haven't got to give, what time I have got available and what time I haven't got available, allowed me to manage my time accordingly. And yeah, it's just been wonderful and realising as well that with sponsorship for me anyway, I don't have to have all the answers because more often than not, I haven't. And what I do tend to do is either refer to our literature or do what my sponsor does for me. If I haven't got experience about whatever a sponsee may be wanting to talk about, I'll refer you to somebody that may have. And it's nice actually knowing that I don't have to have all the answers, because I know I used to always think, I know. I've got the answer for everything. When more often than not, it was no. I never. And it's so freeing to know that I don't have to be like that. So, I'm just thinking of some of the gifts of recovery for me then, just to finish off then. So apart from being able to now have relationships with my family, my children, my grandchildren, I've got a loving partner. I've got a job doing work that, I don't know, if somebody had said to me 10 years, right, Earl, if you get clean and you work a program and you do X, Y, Z, then you're going to be employed helping other people and for the organisation that I work for. I just thought, nah, it's not possible. It's not possible. But it is possible because I'm doing it. I couldn't even buy a passport when I was in active addiction. Today, as I said at the start of the meeting, I've been to conventions around the world. I've been to 10, 15 different countries now. I can go on holiday when I want to. These are just some of the gifts for me, apart from like that internal something that I couldn't describe, because I say this in our local meetings. I can't describe really what our program has given to me internally, because even that one, it's an inside job. I could never understand it. But the more I've worked the program, the more I've got involved with what's on offer within our program and try and apply the spiritual principles that come with our program, I get it now. It's that internal shift that I believe you've got to experience yourself to actually understand what somebody's trying to say about it, because I believe it's all relative to the individual and it's a very personal thing. But something has changed within me. And I'm just really grateful that I get to wake up today and really simplify. When I have a bad day now, I can really take it back to basics. Earl, you're not waking up rattling. You're not having to go out there to do whatever you was doing 9 years ago. And I'm really grateful that I'm part of a fellowship that has helped me change my life. And our simple message of hope that an addict, any addict, can stop using, find that new way to live. I'm living proof of it. And then our promise is freedom. Freedom from active addiction, a day at a time. I'm living proof of it, and there's lots of people around me that are living proof of it. And I'm just a very happy customer, and I'm really grateful of the opportunity to come along here and share. And I really appreciate Steve asking me to come along. And I think I'll leave it there.